Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good evening. Back on the air, Jim and Jamal Potts. And as always, thank you so much for listening to us on your Sunday afternoon, your Sunday evening, depending on where you are. Well, today we got two special guests. We have Zaylor Stout. He's back again from last week to give us a little update. On what's going on out there in Minnesota, Minneapolis. And then we also have, and this is actually the second time for this guest, we have the Honorable Steve Cooley. He's a former LAPD reserve officer and also, more importantly, the former LA County District Attorney. So, Steve, welcome back.
Thank you, Jim.
And Zaylor, same thing. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Well, look, today we're going to be talking about a nation on fire, you know, talking about all of these issues that have occurred throughout this past week, et cetera. Talking about a number of issues. We're going to rely on some experience from Steve on some of the issues. We're going to be reading off, obviously, the emails. And before that, I also want to send a shout out to the veterans that were actually during D-Day, during the D-Day landing. June 6th, 1944, if my basic history serves me correct. And for those veterans that are out there, you know, thank you very, very much for your service. Okay. I also want to send a shout out to the families and the law enforcement officer of the station in Santa Cruz. For those of you who do not know, we lost another officer last night by ambush. Those are sad situations for us. I know that law enforcement doesn't necessarily feel like people like us right at the moment, but we do a lot for the public. And anytime an officer goes down, it is still a sad thing for sure. Okay. And then we're going to have Steve Cooley, and Steve is going to be talking about a number of things, including his new book, which we'll get to in a few minutes. Okay. The first thing I want to do, Zaylor, your timing, is it okay to go through the emails first? You want to give us your update first, or how would you like to do it based upon your time? Zaylor? Okay, we may have lost audio with Zaylor. Anyway, I'll go ahead and get started on these emails. All right, the first one is, Dear Jim, I am outraged that people are demanding that cities defund the police department across the nation. I respect the peaceful demonstrators regarding George Floyd. I think we all are outraged by the actions of that police officer, but getting rid of all police officers for the act of one cop, that is crazy. What happens when we really need them? As an example, they are aware. Are they aware that a large percent of police calls for domestic violence assistance, women being beaten by men and needing help? I hope this defunding move does not go into effect. Susan from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Well, you know, Steve, you could probably even comment on this, but it's true. These domestic violence calls are the most dangerous for police officers. And believe it or not, there's some statistics out there that 40% of police officers killed in the line of duty are based on domestic violence calls. Steve, you were a police officer. You tell me, when you went out there, aren't those the tough calls?
Well, that was a long time ago for me. That was 1972 through 1977. But I think you're right. Historically, domestic violence calls, the officers are oftentimes hurt. They get in the middle of a fight. Sometimes the victim's spouse becomes angry and turns against the officers. It's a very volatile situation. They can go south very quickly.
Yeah, and that's the point that Susan is making from Pittsburgh, is that if you talk about getting rid of police officers, what's going to happen just in that simple example in terms of people that are going to need some help, and now police officers are not going to be there. So, Susan, I will agree with you that this defunding issue or getting rid of all police officers really doesn't make much sense, but we'll just wait and see what happens. And Zaylor can speak on that in a minute as well. Jim, next email. Jim, I know you're a former police officer, but I feel police officers have a tendency to think that they are above the law. We need strong messages from the public that we will not put up with police brutality. They need better vetting processes to keep the racist cops out of uniform and better training for excessive force. Olivia from Houston, Texas. Look, Olivia, this business about vetting as an example, look, there's a very detailed process that they do go through to vet police officers. They just don't bring on any Tom, Dick, and Harry, so to speak. I appreciate your feeling about this without a doubt. And I agree that there should be, well, I don't want to say better training. The training is there, but they cannot control an individual that just does something on the spur of the moment. And like this gentleman, Chauvin out in Minneapolis, the vetting process is very, very, I could tell you for LA County Sheriff's Department, we went through a 9-month vetting process. Steve, you're LAPD. I'm sure that they did the same thing.
Well, yeah, that's true. It was 7 months between the application and actually being accepted. That included psychological profiles, a number of psychological assessments.
Right.
Thorough background check in terms of your history. They'd come out to your house. They'd ask your neighbors. Yeah, it was pretty comprehensive. That doesn't mean that there may be some that kind of get through the cracks, depending upon the agency. Some may not be as thorough as the LA County Sheriff or LAPD.
Right.
Some police agencies. So who knows?
Can I ask you guys this question? Like in the case of Chauvin, I believe he had like 12 to 18 complaints? And if that's the case, is that an area that we can improve in? I mean, it does logically make sense that some are going to slip through the cracks, unfortunately. But when you have like a number of that many complaints, is there something that they can improve on that way?
Jamal, I would agree with you. And I'm sure, Steve, with LAPD, I could tell you with the LA County Sheriff's Department, there's no way you could have that many complaints and you don't get called in the carpet. This particular agency, I can't swear to what their processes are, but I can tell you when the civil litigation starts on this case, that's going to be one of the issues that they bring up. I mean, this guy had 12 to 19, whatever the number was, to me was an excessive amount of numbers without them taking action against this guy. So somebody's going to be held accountable for that at some point. Before I forget, though, if anybody's interested in calling in that has a question or a comment that they want to make, I'm going to hold something up for you right now. So get your pens and pencils ready or take a snapshot of this with your cell phone, because it's kind of, lengthy. Okay. So if you want to call in with a question or a comment, okay, so take a look at this. I'm going to hold this up for you so that you will be able to see the telephone number. All right. The passcodes, et cetera, and the ID in order for you to be able to get it. I'm going to hold it up for about a minute while I'm still talking. In 2 weeks, on on June 21st, we will be back in studio. So this, June 28th, because June 21st is Father's Day. June 28th, we will be back in studio. So this number is only good for this week and for next week as well. After that, we will be back in the studio with the regular 818 number if you want to call in. Okay, so Jamal, look. The training for this, the training, I mean, we get training, but again, I can't explain somebody like Chauvin in terms of what he did. Let's get to this third email real quick. Jim, I'm not sure how we can resolve the issues with police officers. I recognize that not all, by the way, Olivia was from Houston, Texas, if I didn't say that. Jim, I'm not sure how we can resolve the issues with police officers. I recognize that not all policemen are bad. My concern is how the media appears to fan the flames when a white officer kills an African-American, but where's the news when a black officer kills a white suspect or even when an African-American suspect? I feel the emphasis should be in the training. And when a police officer steps outside of that training and department policy, then they should face the consequences. That's from Omar, Salt Lake City, Utah. It's the same thing. It's the training. And I agree with that. Department policy, Jamal, that goes back to what you were just saying, that this gentleman, Chauvin, all those years that he had reprimands and nothing. That doesn't mean that he wasn't trained. That just means that he didn't go through the training and the processes. So we're going to turn our attention right now to, the people out there that are feeling right now that that they should be defunding these police departments. Some people are saying get rid of policemen all the time, as well. So, Zaylor, I know that in Minneapolis, they were having a push on this. And I know that the mayor, as I recall, said that he's not going to defund or something of that nature. So clarify that for us, please.
No problem. There has been a push for a while in regards to significant reforms with the police department here. It's been an issue that's been going on for decades. And in essence, all the city council members that we currently have on our city council, in one way or another, campaigned on reform for the police department. And the difficulty is what leverage do they have to ensure that there are reforms that are happening within the police department? And that's where it's becoming problematic. It's that the police chief doesn't have the ability and the authority really to dictate the terms and conditions of the employment of their officers. If, let's say, for example, the police chief were to fire a particular officer, you know, more often than not, what happens is that there's a pushback from the police federation, and then the decision is overturned and they're reinstated either by an arbiter or based on the grievance process. And it's the same with the mayor. So it appears as though that the government is actually significantly limited in regards to what they can do to demand some reforms, which is what the public is requiring and demanding at this point. And so Stephen Fletcher, for example, wrote an op-ed that was printed in the Times magazine that people can look up, where he specifically outlines his experience as before getting elected and some of the incremental changes that they've tried to implement with the police department that they balked at the incremental stuff, and we're at a point where there's a demand for significant change. And so earlier in the week, I know folks probably heard another one of our city council members, Philippe Cunningham, that was on a national roundtable with former President Obama, where he was talking about defunding the police. But he has since posted on his Facebook page details in regard to the fact that this wouldn't be a disbanding of the police tomorrow and not have something in place in regards to what's going to happen after that. The idea is to disband the police, try to get rid of all of those and start from scratch in regards to getting rid of those bad apples so that we can start from anew, as well as including more community-based type, either community-based policing or having mental health experts go out on those mental health calls instead of having the police involved, you know, different things that they've determined have worked in other locations.
Well, what do you mean get rid of? But you say get rid of. So look, these guys are all civil servants. So it's not that easy to get rid of a police officer. Steve, am I right or wrong?
You're totally right. They've got a property right, and it's protected by the Fifth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. They have a property right to their jobs once they've been selected and earned it. That can be taken away, but they get due process. And as you indicated earlier, the unions, and others will come to their defense, which is it should be. That's how you assure due process, is the adversary system. But yeah, mm-hmm. They have a property right to those jobs. You're not going to be able to come in and say, oh, bad apple, you're out of here. You got to prove it up before you take away that property right.
Well, one of my questions for you, especially given your background, I mean, what do you do with the police department that's running amok and is not responding to the constituents, because I mean, they're not elected into their positions, right? It's the elected officials that are elected in their positions, and they're supposed to be the ones that are managing and supervising and ensuring that some of these reforms are taking place. If they refuse any of those reforms, I mean, here it doesn't look like there's much that the city council can do. Some of it is the burden is on the state legislature.
Well,
but the mayor and the police chief seem to be inept in regard to their ability to do anything.
You're totally right. There should be statewide standards. In the state. For example, California, there is a California Peace Officer Standards and Training that sets statewide standards. There is some things in the law that set standards, like, for example, prohibition against chokeholds. Mm-hmm. In the case of, let's say, Hennepin County, the city of Minneapolis, I would suggest that those officials, particularly that mayor back there, wake up, become more informed. And the chief, too. As a matter of fact, if you look up the Minneapolis Police Department manual on use of force, there is actually the issue of neck, of knee on neck as a restraint is addressed in their manual. And it's been there for many, many years. I think that the mayor and the chief apparently were not even aware of what was in their own manual. I'm not saying it authorizes conduct. But I'm saying it's in there, and there are it's allowed. There are exceptions to it. But I think the elected officials and the appointed chief, they should be the first line of accountability. And then I think another great protection is sue the hell out of them for torts against individuals. They have civil remedies. Sue the offending party.
See, and, but then here's
that would be a step in the right direction.
Here's one of the questions, another follow-up question, let's say I have for you is, okay, so you sue the police department. Guess who pays those torts? It's the city. It's the citizens that end up paying that through taxes.
That is true.
So it's like, you know, we keep people in positions so that they can violate the terms, and then we end up paying for their misdeeds. So here's an example of just to provide some context. You know, the police federation refused to comply with the department ban on warrior training, and yet they still did it anyway. So I mean, there's you know. Again, if they're unable to and unwilling to comply with some of the incremental changes that have been put forward either by the police chief, by the mayor, by city council, what other options and remedies are there available for them?
What was it they didn't comply with? I didn't quite get that. The warrior?
Yeah, there was warrior training that they wanted that they wanted to do that that either the police chief or the mayor or the city council said, we don't want you engaging in this type of warrior training. And yet they engage in the warrior training regardless because the police union is so strong, they can just do what they want to do.
Well, if you're ordered by someone in the chain of command not to do something, and then you do it anyway, that's called insubordination. And that's grounds for discipline or termination. So it looks to me like there's a little more to that. Being insubordinate, that's like the ultimate ground for firing people.
You know, it appears, Zella, in all honesty, it appears that the issue is that it was poor management of that police department and that the situations around that have overtaken to the point where it has led to this. But what about the impact that because of that incident, though, now people have the expectation that all police departments across the country, should be accountable and doing the same thing. I mean, yours sounds like it was specifically being mismanaged. Other departments are not, like I said, LA County Sheriff's not being mismanaged, LAP not being mismanaged. So why should those agencies, okay, why should their feet be held to the fire the same way as a mismanaged situation like in Minneapolis?
Well, Minneapolis isn't the only one that has.
I'm not suggesting that.
I'm just wanting to make a clear statement so that those that are listening understand that that Minneapolis isn't the only police department that has issues with a history in regards to killing unarmed Black men. And so, you know, it appears as though the issue here, and Jim, you and I, we work in employment law areas, so we know about mismanagement and everything from that perspective. But if there's only so much leverage you have over these guys in order to be able to try to require for them to do what they're supposed to do for their job, it's fine. You fire them. Then they go to the union. The union fights. They get reinstated. And if that happens all the time, it seems like this is the strength of the union. Honestly, it appears as though the union, the strength of this particular union, and it appears as though that this is the case with some other unions across the country, is stronger than the elected officials who are responsible for ensuring that they're complying with what's expected of them as you know, protectors of the community.
Well, the issue and the strength of unions has been an issue for a very, very long time. There's no doubt about that. I get that. Unions, you know, back people in the elections and the rest of that. I mean, let's face it, you know, so we know that. And there's always been an outcry regarding how much power some of these unions do have, as a matter of fact. So I think, quite frankly, if we get into a discussion about unions, I think we could be talking here from now until the cows come home, so to speak.
True.
You know, they definitely have a lot of power, and some of that needs to be, I agree, some of that needs to be called into check, so to speak. But you have definitely clarified that. You're welcome to stay on the line. We're going to be talking about some other things as well.
Can I make one more quick comment, Jim?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so one of the emails you received was from Omar in Salt Lake City talking about that The media doesn't, you know, highlight situations where Black officers, let's say, shoot a white civilian. That's actually one of the killings that we had here in Minnesota. Again, we're local, so we see it on the news here. I'm not sure how much of that made national news, but this was actually one of the few situations where the officer ended up being convicted of a criminal act in regards to that particular shooting. But the interesting thing is, again, then the question is we've had multiple shootings where the officers were white and they weren't held accountable. Yet this was one instance where we had a officer of Somali descent who is a Black officer who shoots a white person, and the settlement amount that they received was significantly higher than, let's say, the Philando Castile situation. And he's the one that ends up getting, you know, convicted of this crime, whereas his white colleagues aren't. So that's the difficulty in regards to some of this. And it's hard to compare each situation. They're not exactly the same. I definitely understand that. But there are situations where these things are coming to light. And then the question is the justice system the same for both?
Okay. Let's just be clear. Okay. Cause you just said it. And I appreciate the comments that you just made, but like you said, did we hear of that? No. Why? Because once again, it goes back to the media, okay, where the media is going to turn around. For them, that's not a big deal. They're not going to make it as newsworthy as the situation that we're in right now. Steve could tell you, because I've got his book here, Blue Lives Matter, Blue Lives in Jeopardy, When the Badge Becomes the Target. And for those of you that are out there, I'm going to give Steve a chance to speak about this. But this is Steve's second book, and as I understand, he's got a third one in editing right now. But you know, Steve, you know, you hear what the comment that Zale is making. We have police officers that have been called into check. I mean, tell me, am I right or wrong, especially in L.A. County?
Well, yes, they are called into check. The standard under the U.S. Supreme Court, I think it's the McDonald case, is very high in terms of criminally prosecuting a police officer. Now, some state legislatures are sort of modifying that standard a little bit, lessening it. That's up to the legislature to decide. But no, there are officers that are held to account rather routinely. In these situations, oftentimes their conduct in discharging their firearms is totally justified and heroic. And like, for example, that poor sergeant in Santa Cruz today responds to a call. Probably called in by the suspect. Suspect executes him, ambushes him. In the book that you just pointed out, my book, The Blue Lives in Jeopardy, When the Badge Becomes the Target, in those 10 chapters, these are officers who were either one, ambushed, and didn't even know it was coming, and they're killed just because they're wearing a uniform, or in the alternative, they were caught off guard, because the bad guy knew he was the bad guy. The cops didn't realize that. They're caught off guard. Their guns never come out of holsters, and they're executed. That's what this book is. And it's this is all true, all taken from court records and witnesses and parties and detectives. And it's got a great lessons learned component for the officers who actually oftentimes make mistakes, tactical errors, and pay the ultimate price. Especially law enforcement, to read it. Maybe they'll avoid becoming a victim or a target.
You know, I don't think anybody basically disagrees that Officer Chauvin out there, you know, he was just way out of line. I mean, I everybody you talk to about this. So the outcry, in my opinion, this is a situation where people agree that this guy was wrong. So really, to be honest with you, although I can appreciate some of the backlash, everybody's saying the same thing, including some agencies, police agencies that are saying it's the wrong thing. Yet people are still taking this action against police officers, police stations. The looting, we've kind of talked about. I want to address that also with Steve to find out what happens to these looters when they eventually get caught. But it's like, this is the one time with this situation that I think everybody was universally in agreement that this is wrong. And look at the backlash, in my opinion.
Can I say something about?
Yeah, Jamal, go ahead.
Yes, everybody's in agreement, and thank goodness it was caught on video. And the problem is, if it wasn't caught on video, you know, I think a lot of people have a problem with the code of silence in the within the police departments. Other officers, because if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Chauvin was their senior officer. But those other officers have reported him and the misdeeds that he did, more likely not, because, you know, because the police department it frowns upon that. Other deputies, other officers will frown upon that if they had reported that. Then I think that's the main problem that people are having with a lot of police departments is the code of silence and not turning in those bad apples. And then when one commits something like that and there's four officers standing around not saying anything and not intervening, that's where people have the problem with the police department as a whole.
Okay. Well, just to be clear, my understanding is one of those police officers is only on duty 3 or 4 days. Okay. So right. He's not sure what the heck is going on, not going on. All right. So in all honesty, that doesn't justify anything, but he's probably, who knows? Okay. Another officer, from what I understand, told Chauvin, hey man, shouldn't you let the guy up? Okay. Or you should take your knee off his neck or something of that effect. So
turn
it's not like that. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
what was that?
Turn him over
or whatever. So they weren't just doing that. And remember, I think if I'm not mistaken, Zayla, where did that video come from? Didn't it come from the video came from one of the police officers that had the video cam on them? Is that what that video came from?
No, it was a citizen.
It was a citizen. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah, the main
but they
video
have had
that...
situations where officers have had video. And Steve, in your experience, you're LA County District Attorney. Aren't there situations where police officers have testified against other police officers for excessive force, to your knowledge? Are there?
Yes, absolutely. I think that our current DA, Jackie Lacey, put out some statistics just the other day in response to the public outcry, showing that she prosecuted 49 police officers for a variety of crimes, but primarily excessive force, and one resulted in a death. So yeah, they get prosecuted, but I will repeat, the standards for prosecution in general are very high, proof beyond a reasonable doubt, after consideration of all admissible evidence and a consideration of any plausible defense, such that 12 reasonable people would decide in favor of conviction beyond a reasonable doubt. That's a high standard. Then if it's a homicide by an officer, then the standard takes on constitutional dimensions, which leads to a jury instruction that really is a very, very high standard until the legislatures, and they can change that standard, change that, you're going to always have a very high standard when it comes to officer-involved shootings and the circumstances that lead to that. And in this case, an officer causing death, even though it wasn't a shooting, he caused a death.
You know, is what, and Steve, and you could probably attest to this also. There are cases, Jamal, where in fact, here's the media. They're broadcasting this. They're saying how horrible this was. And they got people who they interviewed to say, oh my God, I saw the whole thing and blah, 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 blah. A jury gets to hear all of the facts, not just a part of the facts. So sometimes the public will get upset because a police officer gets off, okay, because of the fact that the jury heard everything. Not just the limited pieces, okay, when the accidental death or the abuse, so to speak, when it actually occurred. Am I right or wrong on that, Steve?
You're totally right. What the jury ultimately is going to hear, and I predict there will be a jury trial, they're going to hear from expert witnesses in two very important relevant areas. One, expert witnesses on allowable use of force under these circumstances that they were confronted with, and the other, and they're probably experts on both sides, by the way, and then the other area of expertise that's going to be critical to this case is the autopsy reports. And right now, there's already a dispute between the Hennepin County, I guess, coroner, who has rendered an opinion, yes, it's homicide, but the cause of death is why. And then you have the private autopsy expert coroner type guy out of New York who has a different opinion. That's going to be a huge fight between the experts when it comes to this case. And you're right. What people see now and the conclusion they reach now may be different, a different result when that jury hears everything. And right now, all the evidence isn't in. And it's not in any kind of controlled situation like a jury trial. So there's a lot more to this. This case has legs. It has legs.
Okay. Let me ask you a question. The last time we had an incident of this somewhat magnitude was the Rodney King beating, and which also led to a riot because everybody sees this event take place on video, and then the officers got off. So how can we as citizens have faith in the justice system when we see something like that?
Well, in that particular instance, the portion of the video that was played over and over again, at least in the Los Angeles media market, was a selective portion. Jurors saw the entire video that was taken by a citizen from across the way, and they heard from expert witnesses. Now, maybe they were wrong, but they did hear a lot more than we ever saw in terms of that portion of the video that was on television. And I kind of disagree with one thing. We've not seen anything like this since Rodney King. Rodney King was in 1992. Incidents have occurred since 1992. But I think that the distinction is many of them were not caught on videotape. And I think the fact there's so much video potential out there in terms of private security cameras, residential security cameras, individuals with cell phones, that makes a difference. And any law enforcement officer goes out there nowadays and thinks they'll do something that's against policy. Watch out, man, because just assume everything is on video. Everything's on video. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
And just to clarify.
Go ahead, Jamal.
Just to clarify, I know there's been like other cases of police brutality, but I just meant that actually led to like a major riot. That's what I meant.
Oh, okay.
I'm well aware. Yeah, that there's been several incidences.
You're totally right. There's no reaction like we've seen the last 10 days ever since the Rodney King situation. That is totally correct.
Right. The other thing I want to make sure that I added that there were body cam video for the officers that were involved in the George Floyd incident. The body cam video has not been released to the public yet. And so that's going to provide some additional footage and insight that the public is currently not aware of, which could change circumstances. Jim, I mean, since the last show, there's been another video that was released showing when Mr. Floyd was in the back of the police car and there were officers with the doors open and you can't see what's going on in there. So, you know, that's important details that are going to be helpful for a jury to determine what was going on. Was he resisting? I mean, some onlookers have looked at it and said that he was getting beat up. I don't think you can tell by the video what was going on, but that's going to be important, you know, additional important facts that are going to be important at play.
Well, the biggest thing is, I think what's difficult is that we would like everybody to reserve their judgment until all of the facts are out there. And that's not what happens. Everybody wants to give an opinion. Everybody wants to say what's wrong. Everybody wants to have somebody, guilty. Zeller, you practice law out there. You know, you look at it and say, okay, is he guilty? It looks like he's guilty. So that means nothing because, and again, to me, this was very blatant in terms of what we saw. So don't get me wrong. I'm talking about in general that you have these situations. So we have to wait and see all of the facts come out. The problem is going to be now, Steve, he's being charged with they changed it from what, third degree murder to second degree murder. OK, now, you know, the family originally wanted first degree murder. Zeller, Steve, you know, there was no way it's going to be first degree murder.
No way.
People can make these demands. Now, if this guy ends up getting convicted, and the other three is just aiding and abetting, I suspect one or two of them are going to get off altogether, to be honest with you. That guy that was a rookie and the guy that told him, hey, don't, you know, you need to stop or roll him over. I can't see those guys getting convicted. I don't know about the third guy and what was going on with him. But if they get a conviction of this guy, which, you know, if they do, the issue is going to come down to sentencing. How satisfied is the public going to be with whatever sentence that gets handed down? And if they don't like the sentence, can this thing escalate back up again? That would be my concern.
Well, this is Steve. the sentence will be dictated by the charge they find him guilty of. Obviously, second degree murders can carry a longer sentence than third degree murder. They'll both carry longer sentences than some sort of manslaughter, whether it be voluntary manslaughter or involuntary manslaughter. And each state sort of has their different definitions of homicide and then the ultimate sentences. But the sentence will be based upon the charge for which the officer is convicted, assuming he is convicted, and then the judge's decision on how to impose it within the rules that apply to sentencing in that particular state. But there's a whole range of possibilities, ranging literally from not guilty all the way up to second-degree murder. And that will dictate the sentence.
What about the looters? Because you have people out there that are outright stealing. And don't tell me that every one of them is stealing because in memory of George Floyd. I just don't believe that, okay? I mean, I understand the peaceful protesters. I understand about people being upset. I get that. But you can't tell me that the guy that breaks into Tiffany's and steals all these watches, these Rolex watches and the rest of it, okay, that he's doing that in memory of George Floyd. To me, so what happens when some of these individuals get caught, Steve, these looters? Because you've been around long enough to know about looters and how they get, what happens when they actually get caught.
Well, I watched literally hundreds and hundreds of cases of looting on my television during out here in Los Angeles, Long Beach, Santa Monica, The Grove, Beverly Hills, Wilshire Boulevard, and other areas. The looting was horrendous. And it was people who were, I would say, primarily opportunists. They didn't do this in the memory of George Floyd. It was an opportunity to steal in the midst of chaos. There's one instance during the Rodney King looting where a reporter goes up to a looter and says, "Are you doing this in the memory of Rodney King?" He says, and the looter says, "Well, what sport did he play?" It's just they didn't do it because of the reverence that they should show towards the death of a human being. They did it because it was an opportunity to enrich themselves. And out here in Los Angeles, very few were arrested, but the police officers really did not intervene. They would be standing 15 feet away, and looters would just be carrying out bundles of goods. I think that was because the police were outnumbered. They were just flat outnumbered. When you arrest somebody, that means you, the officer, are now off the street and unable to perform other crowd control functions. But no, it was rampant out here in California, rampant, especially here in Los Angeles County.
They have one guy that they caught, okay, and he got caught with a bunch of jewelry out there. And he's being prosecuted federally because of the fact that he was actually in Chicago. He came from Chicago to come out there, and he did some video about how let's go out there and riot or whatever it is. I don't know if you saw that, Zeller, but at any rate, he went to Minnesota, and then he got caught in Minnesota. So they are prosecuting him big time. So,
yeah, was this the guy that was, producing explosives and giving them to people to throw out? Because that's the report that I saw from a Chicago
right. Yeah, I believe so. Mm-hmm. I believe so. I mean, correct. I mean, come on. So some of this is, it's excessive. I mean, and those are opportunists also, in my opinion. We hear about Antifa that, has tried to organize some of this, quote unquote, organize it. Some of these people are just taking this a little bit too far. I'm not talking about the peaceful demonstrations, Al. I want to make that clear. I'm just talking about the ones that are doing these other things that just, in my opinion, it's just, as Steve just said, they're opportunists. Now, Zayla, I also understand that you got together with some other attorneys and you guys are trying to represent some people that were law-abiding that may have been arrested as well. How's that coming along?
Yeah, there are many peaceful protesters. Some news reporters with local and national news organizations that were either pepper sprayed or hit with the rubber bullets. And so I believe the ACLU is working on a more class action type matter to try to prevent these types of police tactics being used against peaceable people that are just protesting. Like, even I have like three or four friends that were, they were just sitting in front of the police precinct and they got pepper sprayed and tear gassed, or the officers were driving by and pepper spraying folks that were just peaceably organizing. Yes. Were some of these people at times violating curfew? Absolutely. Because we had a curfew for over a week. But, you know, pepper spraying somebody that's violating curfew is different than somebody that's engaging in riotous behavior where they're, you know, throwing things at officers or they're looting.
Well, Zayla, let me ask you a question. If the curfew's in effect, okay, why not just abide by the curfew? The curfew's for a reason. So why not just simply abide by the curfew?
I would say that people that want to peaceably protest in a nonviolent way, think of all the people that
they
can do that before the curfew, and they can also do it after the curfew. I don't think that violating the curfew and engaging in peaceful protests after the curfew, I mean, part of it is making a point and making a statement. So again, I wasn't the one that was out there doing that. Just to be clear, I know that there are people that were out there doing that. There's also groups of attorneys that are working with, you know, the over 100 businesses that were damaged locally. Most of them, again, were small businesses. Many didn't have insurance for one reason or another. And so, you know, we're binding together as a community to try to help these organizations.
Well, go ahead, Jamal.
Oh, I got a question, for you and Mr. Cooley. The incident that happened in Buffalo, New York, that wasn't after the curfew, where they knocked down the 75-year-old man and the back of his head was bleeding. The two officers were suspended, and then that whole police, not the department, but I think it was that section, whatever that group was, that agency was within that police department, resigned because the two officers were suspended. What is your thoughts about, what are your both of your thoughts about that?
Well, first of all, I think they did not resign. The officers in that special unit, you're right, it was a special unit for crowd control with the Buffalo Police Department. They did not resign as police officers. They resigned from that special unit that's designed for crowd control. The DA in Buffalo, I don't know what county that is, but they did file charges against the two officers who were seen shoving the individual. Now, the individual, when you look at that video, that crowd of individuals have been told to move away, and the officers were moving towards them in an effort to move them away. And the individual who was shoved, he really took a fall. He went charging towards the officers. Then they shoved him. I think that one there, that's going to be an interesting trial if it goes to trial. Now, he was severely injured. He did appear to be a little frail, but he was taller than the officers, and he was running towards them. And maybe he's an eggshell kind of victim where...
Use the word charged and 75-year-old frail man. I mean, how much...
Well, wait a minute, Jamal. Look, Jamal, he's still, first of all, understand that the police officers are trying to get people to move back.
Right.
He comes towards them, frail or not. Were they supposed to let him run all the way up to them? Push? They don't know what day. I understand what you're saying now. He's 75 years old. You think they knew his age at the time? Or did they just see one of these people that they were trying to move back rush towards them? You know what I'm saying? And I saw that push. That wasn't a very hard push. It turns out that the guy was frail, and he got knocked off balance and fell back and hit his head. I get that. But I agree with Steve. You know, when that goes to trial, if it does go to trial, I'm not sure where that's really going to go. Zayla, what do you think? Did we lose Steve Cooley? Steve, are you still there?
I'm on a low battery, so my daughter's going to help me out here.
Okay, that's fine. At least we can still hear you, Steve. Go ahead, Zayla.
Again, this is the question the question then will be, is the use of force aspect of it. Was that an appropriate use of force given the circumstance? I wouldn't necessarily use the term charge. Approaching and charging. Here's the thing, Jim.
Of course you would.
Approaching and charging, there's different things. Charging is like, you know, you're coming with force. You're trying to bowl somebody over is how I would define charging.
Okay, Zayla, charging as opposed to moving forward when they're telling everybody to move backwards, and now he comes forward. I don't care if he was tippy-toeing forward toward the police officers. The reality is, when they gave him a lawful command and said move back, he should have done that. That's going to be, if they get off, that's going to be the reason why they're going to get off. I see Steve is back. So welcome back,
Steve. My daughter saved me.
These are the discussions that I think the general public has problems with.
It seems to me there was like, I don't know, around 50 officers. Somebody could have took them into custody gently, a little bit better, handled that situation a little bit better than
take them into custody. Then the next thing we would have heard was how a 75-year-old man, innocent, okay, was taken into custody by all of these police officers. Come on, man. These guys can't win when they're out there.
Jim, if he's violating what they're saying, they have the ability to take him into custody, right? It's the question.
They're not going to take him into custody, Zayla, with everything that's going on. For then, I saw that officer. That officer turned him out and pushed his hand and pushed the guy back. He didn't take two hands and shove the guy and knock the guy down.
Did you see what happened to the next person that was closest? They took them into custody.
Well, good. Then they didn't want to take the 75-year-old man that fell down and hit his hand into custody, Taylor.
How many times was Jane Fonda arrested?
Listen, don't talk to me about Hanoi Jane. Oh, whoa. Don't even start with me about Hanoi Jane, because I don't want to talk about Jane Fonda. I don't want to talk about Jane Fonda.
Don't talk to me about arresting a 70-year-old.
In a high profile. You know what? We get ready. You're only supposed to be on 5 minutes. I'm getting ready to click you off. Hey, we only have a few minutes left, though. I want to give Steve a chance to go ahead and pitch his book also. Okay, Steve? So go ahead and tell the audience, in terms of your book, where can they purchase your book?
Well, obviously, they can go on Amazon. If a bookstore was open, which they probably aren't, they'd go to a bookstore. But Amazon has it, along with our first book, which is In the Line of Duty, Blue Lives Matter in the Line of Duty, which really very, very tragic cases that people can become acquainted with. Our last book, which will come out maybe in 6 months, is called Blue Lives Under Fire Shootouts, and it's all LAPD, ranging from the North Hollywood shootout, where a lot of officers were shot, plus civilians, and the suspects were killed, to the SLA shootout, to a lot of individual shootouts. It's all LAPD and sort of a mix, because in that book, not all the officers die. Sometimes the bad guys die. But the most important thing about all these books is the lessons learned component, written by a use of force expert named Greg Meyer. If officers read these books, and they just read the lessons learned component, it will potentially save their lives, because there are lessons to be learned in these tragic incidents where officers are murdered.
Very good. Hey, Jamal, give us the update on the sports, because we always like to do a little pitch at the end about sports. So, Jamal, what's happening in the world of sports these days?
Real quick. Well, it looks like the NBA's got plans to resume on July 31st. They're going, like, in Orlando, Florida. They're all going to play there. Now, there's going to be 8 teams that will not be allowed to participate because they absolutely suck. And they had no chance to be in the playoffs anyway. So they're going to exclude those 8 teams from participating in July 31st and let the rest of the teams play that kind of in the hunt and let them finish out the season that way.
Is your team one of those teams, Jamal, that's going to be excluded from participating?
No, I'm a Laker fan. I'm not a LeBron fan, but I'm a Laker fan, so the Lakers are first place, so we good.
And we're expecting the Lakers to take it all. What about the NFL, Jamal?
The NFL, they're planning on starting September 5th. It's going to be the first game of the season. So right now they're doing, like, virtual spring league right now, which means they got all the new guys learning the plays and the new systems and all on virtual cell phones and computers and stuff like that. So it looks like the NFL will be here and the Giants is in town, so I will be there. And I'm excited about it.
Don't worry about it. The Giants will be just as sorry this year as they were before. All right. We want to thank Steve Cooley for coming out. Okay, Steve, we appreciate you coming on the air. Zeller, we don't appreciate you coming out, but we do appreciate what you say. No, I'm just kidding, man.
Thank you, Mr. Cooley. Thank you, Mr. Cooley. Appreciate you being on
there. Thanks so much, Cooley.
So, all right, you've been listening to Jim Potts and Jamal Potts on LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show. Be sure to join us next week. And if you like what you heard, do us a favor and spread the word. Until then, be aware, be vigilant, and more importantly these days, be safe. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you coming out.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.